It's time for Understanding the Law, a show taking your questions about how the law affects you. A show that is a deep discussion on the most common topics that come up in a law office and how the system of law works right here in Cullman County. If you have a question about the law, give us a call here at the Live 95 studio at 256-737-9505. This program is made possible by the support of local Cullman attorney Melvin Haystack. Views and opinions presented on this show are not the views and opinions of Live 95 staff or management. You should independently verify information heard on this program yourself. And no lawyer on this show actually helped write that disclaimer. And now, here's your host for Understanding the Law, Big D, Daryl Netherly.
Welcome back to another edition of Understanding the Law. Triple Threat is in studio. So this past Saturday, we had a political rally next to the courthouse for Melvin Haystack running for circuit judge, and we had a great crowd there. Gave out a lot of hot dogs and hamburgers.
Well, there was 300. It was over 300. It's probably pushing 350 that we did there, and then we cooked the rest of them up. I ended up having 400 hamburgers and hot dogs. I cooked the rest of them up and took them out to Smith Lake Park, where they had the veterans had some kind of a fishing tournament to raise some money. And all them fishermen's been out since 3 o'clock in the morning, so I got them when they come in about 3 o'clock that afternoon. Boy, they're starving to death. So
I bet they appreciate it. They were gone.
10 minutes. 10 minutes. Every hamburger and hot dog was gone. That's probably feature 60 out there. It was just wiped out.
How funny.
Yeah.
Well, look, we had a good time. We had lots of people to just randomly pull in and meet you and shake your hand. And I seen you talk to a lot of people last Saturday.
Yeah, it was running around like a chicken with the head cut off, man, because, yeah, you know, run out of buns, run out of a lot of stuff, had to make some runs, and had my brother there cooking, and he grilled all day long, and had good music, didn't we? Cosmic Sound.
Yes.
Moved right in there and played some good music. I see people every once in a while that's kind of move around.
Yeah, I see
and
move their hips a little bit.
It's kind of funny.
It was a good time.
Yeah, people sitting over at the table, it's kind of funny watching them just nonchalantly. You see their shoulders move and their heads move a little bit to the beat. But it was good music.
It was
a lot of fun. The weather perfect.
The weather was great. We had people honking their horns and 18-wheelers blowing their horns, and it was just a lot of fun. And, you know, and the main thing that I just really enjoyed, Melvin, what was the fellowship amongst everybody. And, I mean, everybody was happy to come see you and shake your hand and talk to you and find out your views about, you know, why you're running. And it was just a good time. And I appreciate you letting us come out.
Well, that was fun. I appreciate y'all coming out. And, you know, and then people also got to interact with each other. And there's some people I haven't seen in a long time that had come up, and my parents were there, and they got to meet some people or talk to some people they haven't talked to in a while. So it was a good time. It would be fun. I wish we could do it every Saturday, right, you know, or something. But it was fun. I enjoyed it.
Let me tell you something. Here's a true fact. When you have free food, people will show up.
People show up. You're right. They will.
Danielle and I, we were live on Facebook for several times, and then we kept telling everybody, you got free food.
Yeah.
Here come another car.
Yeah. Yeah, when it got to be, 11:30 to about 1 o'clock, man, it was on then. It was just almost a line out there. So.
It was fun.
But everybody, I mean, I had probably, I think, about 70 T-shirts there. They was wiped out within 30 minutes.
Yeah,
it was gone.
Quick.
And then had signs. Don't tell me how many signs got gone, but pretty well most of the people that was there tried to find me or find somebody to talk to, you know, so it was good that they came up here and shake your hand, say, hey, I wanted to meet you and we're supporting you and all that stuff. So.
Man, let me tell you something. That means a lot.
Where's that food? We're supporting you. Where's that food at?
Where's that hot dog at? Big D was talking about the hot dogs on Facebook. Where they at?
Big D ate.
I ate three. That's all I ate.
Yeah.
But let me tell you something. The first one kind of filled me up, and I'm like, I can't stop with just one. I got to have another one. I got to really fill my belly up. And yes, man, it was good. I love hot dogs.
Hot dogs.
Give me another one. And your brother would burn mine because I ate one, and I love burning hot dogs.
Let me tell you something. The brother was on the grill, buddy, and he was passionate about it, too.
Man, he was flipping
he done an incredible job. Yeah. He had the grills going. I think there was like three grills going at one time.
And then my My son was over, my 14-year-old's over there helping him out, get all the keeping all the buns, and then run out of ketchup, run out of mustard, and had to get some more of that, which luckily we had some in the in our vehicles and stuff.
So. Well, look, I seen Brody now. He was doing signs left and right, giving them out and collecting them. And yeah. He was on the ball.
Yeah, he loved it. He loves this stuff. My little 9-year-old, he loves it.
I enjoy having Brody in the studio. We need to bring him back one of these days.
Yeah, he's actually playing baseball right
is he?
Now. Yeah, he's over playing a baseball game at Vineland. I'm having to miss it, but that's part of what I do, I guess.
Indeed. I mean, being an attorney and running for a political office.
Is a nightmare.
Yeah, your time's gone.
Tough. Yeah, it's tough.
I mean, just to have 2 or 3 hours of sleep is probably wonderful for you. It's crazy.
A deep sleep. We're not thinking about, oh my gosh, I need to do this. I need to do that. When am I going tomorrow? How am I going to get this handled? So.
There's always something. There's always something that has to be accomplished. But, you know, last week we had talked about, or I had brought up, the lawsuits that was filed and the article that was in the Coleman Times, and you had spoke on that. But, and we can still touch on the bonds and some hearings that we didn't get to last week, and jury weeks and restitution. But, Melvin, one of the things that I wanted to ask you right off the bat is, what are some of the other issues in your campaign, and how are you on solving those?
Well, I have one issue in particular I talked about to people is restitution. And we have restitution dockets that are set ever so often, and we kind of call them show cause dockets. Other courts, other systems in other parts of the state calls them frat dockets. Fines, restitution, cost recovery dockets, and essentially what they are, it's an opportunity for to get people into court to say, hey, you owe back fines, you owe back costs, you owe back restitution. Why are you not getting these? Why are we not getting this stuff paid? That goes back to that lawsuit. If you remember what we talked about last week. The lawsuit that I had filed is these cases that are 15 to 20 years old, where these people's already served their time. They're off probation. The courts they don't have jurisdiction over their case per se. They can still hold them in contempt if you determine that they're doing it willfully. But you know, once somebody's served their time and they're off probation, you can't just throw them in jail and say you're gonna sit in jail until you have bonds. Until you pay this cash bond to get out. So that's what the lawsuit was about. And there's going to be a ruling on it. We're still expecting a ruling any day on it. And I think it's going to, they're going to look at the issue of cash bonds and poor people. That's the biggest issue, like I said, that I had filed on it. But when we're talking about bonds generally, you know, the Constitution says, hey, you're entitled, everybody's entitled to bail except for if it involves a capital case. But, you know, at one time, I think you go back to the old West days, the 1800s, whatever else. You know, if you was charged with robbery or murder or whatever else, a lot of times you're just thrown in jail.
Right.
And, you know, and you waited. Things were different then. Probably waited for, 2 weeks, and he was in front of a jury trial.
Right, exactly. You're exactly right.
They didn't drag his cases out 4, 5, 6 years before you got a jury trial. So you'd sit in jail for, 2 weeks, a month, or whatever else, and wait your time for trial. But eventually, they would set bonds, and what a bond is, you either get a person to come pledge their property, and says, hey, this person's going to appear for court. If they don't appear for court, then you got my property as collateral. So that kind of makes, gives the person posting the bond an incentive to make sure they go to court. Or you can get a bonding company, a surety company, these bail bond companies to go sign your bond. You have to pay them a fee. And all of it's is a given opportunity for someone that has been accused, that has not been convicted, to get out of jail. Their presumption of innocence go with them until they're actually convicted. But like I said last week, not everybody's entitled to bonds, and that has been an issue, especially a couple of murder cases around here that people's had some issues with. And I think you know. And another thing, when you're putting someone's charged with cooking dope for a $1 million or $1.5 million bond, and then you got someone charged with murder and on $50,000 bond. That's a problem. You know what I'm saying? People look at that and say, well, why is that? Exactly. You would think it would be flipped.
You would think.
So, you know, the purpose of bonds, make sure they appear for trial. That's for sure. Allow people to get out. Their presumption of innocence go with them. But then also, you have to, you know, there's factors you take consideration. What, you know, where does this person live at? We talked about this last week. Where they live at? What's their seriousness of the crime they're charged with? You know, what's the likelihood they're going to get convicted? Because, you know, if I was to go out and murder somebody and I'm caught red-handed, and I know I'm caught red-handed, and it's a particularly heinous crime, you know, there's a chance that I'd probably take off. You know, they ain't going to find me.
Exactly.
So them kind of people, you pretty well want to make sure they stay in jail. You don't want them to be released.
And not that I want to sit here and talk about the law the whole time, but let me just ask a question or two. So I get caught for cooking dope, and they're saying, hey, look, Big D, it's such a large amount, you're trafficking.
Yes.
Okay, and you're $1 million bond, and
yes.
Now you're in the county jail. What's the odds of me actually getting out on a $1 million bond?
It's tough. You're not, and I tell you, there's some bonding companies that went under because of that. They go bond somebody out on $1 million bond, and that person takes off, and then you got to go find them, and you're up for $1 million. You just can't. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, your business is done.
Yeah, you're done. You're done. You know, and they get paid a $10,000 fee. Well, heck, you're going to spend a lot more than that getting it. So most time what happens, in person sit in jail for a little while, and then the bonds gets lowered down. You know, sometimes they put conditions on it. Hey, we'll owe this bond to $50,000, or we'll let you be released on your own signature, but you got to agree to go to some rehab and things. So a lot of times that's some things that and that's more on the district court level when the case is in district court, because once it gets to circuit court, that means your case has already been presented to a grand jury. You've already been indicted, and now you're ready for a jury trial. So usually them issues of going to rehabs and doing that is pretty well out of the window. You had that opportunity while it was pending in district court.
One more question, we'll go on. During your time as an attorney here in Coleman, and you've seen these property bonds, what kind of percentage have you actually seen where people actually lost their property? That's just a random question.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, that would be something. See, that would be something to probably ask the clerk. The sheriff may know that. It's very rare. I don't think it's that rare. But now they can put some kind of liens or whatever else. But they put. Listen, you start getting notices to come to court because you signed so and so's bond, and you're finding out that hey, they're fixing to attach this amount of money. Or they send a notice that, hey, I can take your property and sell it to get this money,
right,
you know, on this bond amount. People start finding people real fast. A lot of times that's what happens.
And I'll tell you, one time I done that for a friend of mine, okay? And so he told me when he was supposed to go to court, okay?
Yeah.
And it was like the day before court or court day. And I said something to him. And he says, oh, no, court's been canceled. Well, I'll just be up front and tell exactly what happened. Pamela Nell at the time was she was the judge in Hansville.
Uh-huh.
And I personally called her.
Yeah.
And I said, this is what he said. And she says, Mr. Nethery, court is still in session.
Yeah.
I went to his house and got him.
Oh, yeah. And took
him to court. I carried him to court because my property was on this.
You're right.
And let me tell you something. She ripped him apart.
Oh, yeah.
And put him back in jail.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm thinking, buddy, that was my land. You know what I'm saying? That's my property.
And that's the thing. You know, whenever you sign somebody's bond and they're out on bond, if you want to come off their bond, you know, because of whatever issue, you can turn them back in. You can take them back to jail and say, I want off his bond.
And I did.
Yep.
And I did.
Yeah, so
you know.
Citizens need to be aware that if they're on any type of property bond, that they can renege and go and talk to the judge, the magistrate, Miss Lisa Maxwain, and renege on it, and an automatic warrant will go back out for that person, and they will be arrested.
You ask for a bondsman's process, and you know, or whatever you need to get off that bond. So,
that's crazy.
It is serious business when you do it. But.
And then, not that I would ever do it again, but if I did, that person would probably be in my house handcuffed
somewhere
to the sofa until court day.
Make sure they don't get away.
You're not leaving.
Yeah. Well, let me, another issue that's kind of big out there that we've been talking about the restitution. I need to get back to it. So how can we fix this restitution? You know, it's probably, you could probably look at those cases that are old, but if you don't have jurisdiction on them, there ain't too much you can do on it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I think then you just focus on the restitution. You focus, you know, instead of trying to collect the court costs and the fines, although they're important, you know, the restitution is what's more important. Somebody stole something or destroyed somebody's property or whatever else, paying them back their money is a lot more important.
Exactly.
So you know, you can have them people to come to court and try to figure out how we're going to get it done. And there's a lot of ways to do it. You can do a civil judgment on it. You know, the prosecutor, heck, I think as a judge, you probably just issue a civil judgment. It's probably better if you have a prosecutor say, hey, judge, file a motion, make this a civil judgment, because if it's a civil judgment against somebody, you can't bankrupt on it because it involves a crime. And if that person is working, then you can
garnish
their
wages.
Okay. The other thing is this, and maybe there is a law out there that I don't know about. If there ain't, I don't know why the legislature don't pass this law. If you owe restitution, court costs, and fines, how do you get your income tax refunds back?
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
You get a judgment filed. They attach it to the – they send it to the Department of Revenue. They've got it. This person's got $3,000 come back for them on their state income taxes. How, you know?
Exactly.
But they owe $2,000 court costs and fines.
They should take it.
If you don't take it, at least take half of it.
Exactly.
Or take a percentage of it so you can get that money back. But you know, the most important, and I preach this, the most important part is the restitution part. Get these people paid back that owes money because, okay, let me give you an example, okay? Get charged with DUI, you have a wreck, and you hit somebody's vehicle and tear their vehicle up. You don't have insurance. They're having to get their vehicle fixed. And then they're out $500 deductible.
Right.
Well, you owe that person the $500 deductible back because you caused this wreck.
Exactly.
By being drunk and driving. And and you just get by with it.
I mean,
how fair is that? It
exactly.
ain't fair.
It ain't
There's
fair.
Nothing fair about it. Nothing whatsoever.
All right, so let me ask you this. You're talking about a civil lawsuit, and then we can garnish wages on a civil lawsuit.
Yes.
But that doesn't, and I'm just asking, that does not apply if you go to small claims court. They can't garnish wages on a small
claim. Yeah, small claims. Any time you get a judgment, any type of a judgment, you can garnish wages on it.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you have a judgment... If you have a judgment for $70 in small claims court, yes, you can file a garnishment. Cost you what, 11 or 21? I can't remember how much they cost you. They cost you some money. You file the pay the filing fee for a garnishment, and then know where they work at. And yes, they'll get served. And
okay.
Take the money
well,
out.
I didn't know that if they would do it
yeah.
on a
it
small
can
claims
be anything.
Court.
Anything, sure can.
I did not know that.
Yeah. So
you can do what?
A lien.
Mm-hmm. So is that something that the judge will automatically do a lien on somebody's property if they don't pay that? Or if they quit their job, or what?
I would say they shouldn't do it until something's filed. You know what I'm saying? So that some of this stuff's going to be kicked over to the DA's office. In these criminal cases, that's going to be the DA's office saying, all right, here's what we owe this money. We're going to file this civil judgment. We want this to be – he owes this amount of money. We want you to get to enter a judgment for this amount of money so we can collect it civilly. So then you can you know, a judge can make it a civil judgment.
Okay.
And then it's just like any other case. When there's a judgment, you can get the money. You can file a garnishment. I also filed these judgments like Danielle's talking about. Once you get a judgment, you can take it and file it as a lien in probate court. And when you file it lien as a probate court, if that person tries to refinance or they get a mortgage right. or they try to sell property, whatever else, that lien attaches to that property. So
that's the route to go.
You're right, it does.
Once you're taken care of before it
yep.
can ever transfer.
Yep, we clear the property.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the route to go.
But now, Melvin, on the restitution cases that you were talking about, I had this just come to my head about. So if you have someone that owes restitution and court costs, and you know, you said that it could turn into a civil matter to where they would have a civil judgment per se. But what about, like, you know, when you have a doctor's bill and you can't pay that full doctor's bill and they do a estimated amount, you know, that you can pay back instead of full restitution? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, but if it's a – well, okay, if it's connected to a criminal case, is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
If you have – because,
right.
yeah, if I got a – if there's – as in a victim that's been assaulted and they went to the hospital and they got doctor bills, whatever else – Then what happens is if that person's pleads guilty to assault or they're found guilty, then there's a restitution hearing or they agree to restitution. And then inside that restitution that's owed that victim is that amount of money for that doctor's bill or their co-pays or deductibles or whatever else is associated with it. You can't make money off restitution. That's the key. You don't get pain and suffering right, and all that stuff. It's just got to make you whole. Whatever money you spent, whatever money you lost, you get paid back that amount and that amount only.
But let's be real, Melvin. If somebody does something like this and there's $20,000 medical bill and $10,000 car, what's the odds of you getting all that money back?
You won't.
There you go.
It just don't happen.
And that's the sad part about it. So a victim is truly a victim.
Absolutely.
Because they're never going to regain
what
they
lost. You're never going to be made whole. It's almost impossible. You're really going to have to be on top of it. You know what I'm saying? You can because, listen, that victim's miserable. You can make that defendant a little bit miserable, make them come to court every month. You know, you come to court every Friday and let's talk about this and let's figure out how we're going to get this thing done.
737-9505. We will let you call in if you want to ask Melvin a law question. Let him answer it real quick. I said we weren't going to sit here and talk about it. It's going to go to other issues, but we get sidetracked.
We do.
We'll be back in just a moment.
When a disaster occurs, neighbors and community organizations want to reach out and help. But this isn't always easy. That's where your local Cullman County VOAD can help. VOAD stands for Voluntary Organizations Active in Disaster. Your Cullman County VOAD serves to coordinate relief efforts throughout the county during times of crisis to ensure no area or family is left unassisted. But to do this, the Cullman County VOAD needs your help. Whether you're an individual, faith-based group, civic organization, or business, your Cullman County VOAD needs your help. To learn how you can be a part of the Cullman County VOAD, call the Cullman County EMA at 739-5410, 739-5410. Email CullmanCountyVOAD@gmail.com or search Cullman County VOAD on Facebook. Your Cullman County VOAD is Volunteer Organizations Active in Disaster.
Attention Cullman business owners. You are the people we want to hear from. All of us here at Live 95 want to take a moment to remind you of what life was like before Live 95. So we don't want to go back to that. This is just a friendly reminder that Live 95 can help you. If you're a new business just getting started, or a well-established large business, Live 95 can actually help you get tax breaks on your tax bill. Woo-hoo! Hey, we're not kidding. Seriously. Send us an email at studio@live95cullman.com today or visit our website, live95cullman.com, and click on support to find out more right now. Do it. Thanks for listening to Live 95. We're Cullman's independent radio. There are a lot of signs on the side of the road right now, which means an election is coming up. Sure, name recognition is good, but in 2018, voters expect a little more than that. We can help. Radio is a great medium to tell voters more about yourself, your platform, and your goals. Our very own Melissa with Live 95 is ready to take your call at 256-339-5554. 256-339-5554. Live 95 can help get your message out to Cullman County. You're listening to Live 95. Welcome back. Live 95 is Cullman's independent radio. You're listening to Understanding the Law, a show taking your questions about how the law affects you. A show that is a deep discussion on the most common topics that come up in a law office and how the system of law works right here in Cullman County. If you have a question about the law, give us a call here at the Live 95 studio at 256-737-9505. This program is made possible by the support of local Cullman attorney Melvin Hastings. Views and opinions presented on this show are not the views and opinions of Live 95 staff or management. You should independently verify information heard on this program yourself. And now, once again, here's your host for Understanding the Law, Big D, Daryl Netherly.
Welcome back to Understanding the Law. Triple Threat is in studio. We were actually talking about cars, so there you go. Not that I like to give free promos, but I will. So, this gentleman that works on my cars, let me tell you something. This guy is, he comes over and looks at my Mazda Miata and says, hey, look, you got a blown fuse. I would have never known it. $3.50. It completely shut down my vehicle.
The blown fuse.
The blown fuse completely shut it down. Who would have known? So anyway, John Godby, give him a call. You can find him on Facebook. he works on every car I have. So
it's nice to have someone that knows how to work on
cars. And he comes to my house too.
Dang.
So there you go. That's sweet. Him and his family, just sweet, sweet family. All right, Melvin. So let's go over here just for a minute, and I want to ask you about an ad that I personally seen in the Shopper's Guide. It was 2 pages, okay? So in this was an article about an armed robber being released. So the first thing I want to ask you is, did you run that ad?
Yes. Yes, what I have
and,
done.
And what was the purpose of that?
All right. So, yes, I run that ad, and you know my ads because I always try to sign them. I have one coming out tomorrow, too. So I sign them, and that way it's kind of a – Because I want to address, I told the other night, I use these as teaching points, and I know it sounds kind of schoolish or kiddish or whatever, but it is. There are teaching points that you can say, hey, look, here's an issue, here's how it was handled, and here's how I think we can do it better, what's different about me, than the way that it's been handled by you know, my opponent. So, in that, and what I always do is say, look, I make a point, and then I'll say, this is what I'll do or what I won't do. And then I sign it, because I'm making a promise to people, because I want people, hey, you know, if they elect me June the 6th, I mess up, you know, them come to me and say, look, Melvin, you know what, you signed this thing saying you wouldn't do this, you would do that, and here you are doing it. That ain't going to happen, and I know that. So I know when I'm making these promises and signing them that has some relevance to it. But in the ad, there's a guy, Mr. Cornelius, that was convicted in Coleman County of robbery first degree, which is armed robbery, and he did. He was charged and convicted of holding a gun at gunpoint, robbing a convenience store down at Dodge City. That happened in 2005. So after he was convicted, he was sentenced to life without parole. The reason he was sentenced to life without parole was he had 5 prior felonies. And at that time, it was Judge Hardiman on the bench. There was a judge. And he decided, hey, since you have 5 prior felonies, you just got convicted of robbing a convenience store with 2 women in it at gunpoint, I could sentence you to life, or I could sentence you to life without parole. He decided to sentence him to life without parole because he heard the whole case. And he knows some more facts that I know about it too. But so Cornelius started, and this was in 2005 when he was convicted. So immediately he started challenging his conviction, started challenging his sentence, says there wasn't evidence, I shouldn't have been sentenced this way. So he went through the appeals courts. Then after the appeals court says, no, you got convicted of it, the jury believed the story, and you're stuck with your sentence, that's it, it's a legal sentence. Then he started filing things we call Rule 32 petitions, attacking his lawyers probably, attacking everything, the whole system. Went through that 2 or 3 times, filing, just attacking his conviction and stuff. And then he filed this thing, it's called a Kirby motion. And Kirby motions, and this is real, real important because this case may, as there's so much in this case that you can learn and see, man, what are the issues that we're really facing? What's something that we can fix in court? There's a bunch of issues. Let me talk one at a time. A Kirby motion, the state of Alabama, well, actually the Supreme Court of Alabama ruled, hey, prior to 2000, and that's important, prior to 2000, whenever we had the old Felony Offender Act, if you had 3 or more prior felonies and you got convicted of a Class A felony, kidnapping, rape, robbery, murder, something like that. The only sentence you could get was life without parole. That was it. So when they passed that law in 2000, the legislature, they changed the sentencing range, says, well, now you can be considered for life sentence or life without parole. Remember, he was sentenced to life without parole. But the whole purpose, because that was in 2005, of course, after 2000. Them Kirby motions applied for people that were sentenced before 2000.
Which he was.
Well, no, he wasn't.
He wasn't.
No, remember, he was sentenced in 2005. Okay. So the Kirby motions apply for people 2000. So every time he filed a Kirby motion saying, change my sentence, the courts ruled, we can't. You was filed, yours was in 2005. You don't apply because you wasn't sentenced under right. prior to 2000. Okay. So he had a full-blown hearing in front of Judge Nicholas, and Judge Nicholas denied his motion, so he can't. All right, so then he takes that to the Court of Criminal Appeals, and he takes it to the Supreme Court. And the Court of Criminal Appeals rules, there is no way to change your sentence. Once you got sentenced in 2005, 30 days after you were sentenced, you're stuck with it. The court can't change it no more. So, and then the Supreme Court look at the case, and they said, they wouldn't look at the case. They said, there's nothing for us to look at. So that was in 2014 when all this happened. So in 2016, again, he gets another lawyer, files another motion to have his sentence changed. And Judge Nicholas still had the case and says, I can't do it. The Court of Criminal Appeals, everybody's done rule, we can't do it. We don't have jurisdiction. Very important word, which means I don't have the authority. Even if I enter the order, it'd be void. It's no good. The order's no good. So after that, that was like in February of 2016. In March of 2016, he files another Rule 32 petition alleging essentially the same things. And I think he alleged that, hey, the prior convictions weren't properly proved in trial or something that he alleged. It's, hey, it's something you throw out there, see if it'll stick. Well, when you go back and look at the record, which I did, of course, all of his prior convictions is actually in out-of-court record. And also on his sentencing order, Judge Hardman wrote them down. He wrote them the case numbers down, which means he wouldn't know. They had to be proved. He wouldn't know the sentence, the case numbers to write down when he sentenced them to it. So anyway, that case was transferred to my opponent on March the 9th. And on March the 11th, there was an order entered that changed his sentence from life without parole to a life sentence. And I attached copies of that in the shopper's guide. And it's been labeled an attack ad. And I'm like, what is attacking about that ad? There's nothing attacking. I'm showing a case, how it started, how it progressed through this process. Took 2 pages and a lot of money to do it. But you get over here and everybody's ruling for 11 years. So from 2005, 2016, everybody's ruling, we can't change your sentence. The sentence can't be changed. And then another petition is filed, and in 2 days' time, his sentence is changed. And here's the significance of it when we talk about hearings and stuff. When a petition is filed, you're always entitled to a hearing. That's just elementary law. Everybody knows that. So when a petition's filed in court, the other side gets served, which in his case would be the state of Alabama. They get served. They get 30 days to answer. Typically, all petitions in circuit court, you get 30 days to answer this thing. And then you get a hearing set 30 days, 60 days, 90 days down the road. But in 2 days' time after petition's filed, his sentence has changed. So I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. There's a problem with that, because the state of Alabama's not getting heard. Are we really in that big of a hurry to change somebody's sentence? I mean, we got to get this guy out. Oh, my God, this is illegal. And in 2 days' time, you change his sentence without giving the other side an opportunity to be heard. And then there's no way that you can go back and look at this 500. He's got 500 page. He's got 3 volumes of records, and each one of them is 100 pages. And then he's got tons of other documents, at least 500 pages. There's no way you can go back through that and say, you know what, you're right.
poor guy, we got to get you fixed and change your sentence. So his sentence is changed, which allows him to be paroled, and then a few months later, he's paroled out. He's out on an illegal sentence. An illegal order, not an illegal sentence, an illegal order. It's not lawful. It's crazy. It doesn't make any sense. And what is the purpose of it? The purpose of it is to say, look, here's a problem, and it's a big problem. And we can fix that problem. Number one, when a petition is filed, number one, allow the other side an opportunity to respond to it. That's a good, that only makes sense. Allow the other side an opportunity to be served with it. And then give it a hearing. And then look at the law and figure out, is this thing right? And I'm all about it. Hey, if this guy was being held in prison and it was wrong, I'm all about let's do what's right. But you can't do it in 2 days' time.
Well, here's my opinion. My opinion, number one, is if he's already been through all this paperwork and everybody's then said it can't be done, the law's been passed, what gives him the right to continue to petition again and again and again?
He does it. See, that's another problem.
My thinking is, once that first go-around says, no, that's it, he shouldn't have the right to continue to do it and waste probably taxpayers' money.
Well, you're right, because it is called a post-conviction petition, post-conviction relief. It's Rule 32. It's post-conviction relief is what it's called under the Alabama Rules of Criminal Procedure. And what it says is you have an opportunity to file these Rule 32s, and you got to do it within a certain period of time of after appeals run. After you've went through this appeal time, then you've got, I think it's a year or so within a year to file these things. And you can only file one. You're only entitled to one. Now then, later on, and really, if you read the rule, it says that you better address all your issues, because you really can't bring in a successive petition.
Right.
So, but sometimes it's allowed. But let me tell you this. On the other hand, any illegal sentence, just like any, I say illegal, I'm going to say unlawful, that's probably a better word. Any unlawful sentence is just like any unlawful order. They're void. So, and you can bring it up at any time. So let me give you an example. 5 years ago, this guy, I don't know, and I'm just throwing, this ain't real life. I hope it ain't real life. This guy gets a parking ticket. It's a violation. Or a traffic ticket. It's a violation. Motion gets 30 days. And he's still sitting in jail for 5 years later. Because he don't know that he can't sit in jail for longer than 30 days. Well, only common sense would say, hey, you can challenge that. That is an unlawful sentence that can be challenged at any time. So if this was an unlawful sentence on him, then he ought to be able to challenge it.
Exactly.
But the fact of the matter is, he's already went through his Rule 32s, and it's done. You're right. You're saying, is it costing taxpayers money? Yes, because typically what happens is, when you file these Rule 32 petitions, a lot of time it goes to the district attorney's office. So they're having someone they're having to pay to do this. And the other thing is, sometimes they go to the attorney general's office, and usually a state prisoner like this, these cases would get referred to the attorney general's office. So yeah, you have someone down there that's working on appeals, that's dealing with these cases, and they get this Rule 32. Now, if it's a legitimate one, then they need to be able to address it. But if it's not legitimate, why are we spending time on it?
So my next question is, we know that this was done wrongfully. Mm-hmm. The man was set free. Yes. We know this. We have facts. Why aren't we out there picking him up right now and putting him back in jail?
Well, he has been pardoned. He has been paroled out. So here's the other issue. Here's my thinking is, why is the Attorney General's office not looking into this?
Right.
All right. Or why did the DOC, why did the Department of Corrections allow this to happen? You got to go back there. And I tell people all the time, you can't imagine the authority that a circuit judge has. They have a lot of authority. When you sign your name as a circuit judge, people listen. You know, and that's what happened. The people at the Department of Corrections said, hey, that we got a circuit judge's order. they changed his sentence. So, and more than likely, not making excuses for them, they probably just assume that it's right. You know, right, so, they, because you got, because there are legitimate Kirby motions. There are legitimate sentences that got changed legitimately. So the Department of Corrections, this is an older case. This guy's been in prison for a long time. So they probably assumed that this was a legitimate order and it went on. You know, a few years ago, let me tell you this, and nobody caught it. But we had some, the sentencing, there used to be a sentencing, they used to, when they sentenced people, it's called coterminous sentence, and it's actually on plea agreements and sentencing orders. And what happened, what that meant is, when you sentence one, if you got multiple crimes, multiple convictions, when you finish one sentence, the greatest sentence, the other sentence is finished, you finish other sentences too. So, if I got a 15-year sentence here, or let's say, I got a 12-year sentence, and then get it, commit another crime, you got a 15-year sentence, later. Well, if you run at 15-year sentence coterminous when the 12-year sentence, when you get down that 12-year sentence, it means you also get down the 15-year sentence too.
Gotcha.
And that was legitimate. It was recognized. It was on all the plea documents, but somebody, and I'm assuming it was the district attorney somewhere or the attorney general's office in Alabama said, whoa, wait a minute now. Or maybe even a lawyer in the Department of Corrections says, where is coterminous in the law? So the Supreme Court says, you know what, you make a point. So they go back and look through the law, and guess what? There's only two sentences you can have. Concurrent sentences, which mean you run them together, or you can have consecutive sentences, which means you stack the sentences one behind the other. So you serve the 12 first, then you serve the 15 next, and then you serve whatever's after that. Nowhere could they find the word coterminous. So Alabama Supreme Court says, uh-oh, guess what? All the court systems in Alabama, all these people that's got these coterminous sentences, every one of them's unlawful. Every one of them's illegitimate. So they had to go get all these people come back in and get re-sentenced again because they had an unlawful sentence. Now, that was a legitimate reason.
Gotcha.
So the moral of the story on this big Cornelius case is all about hearings. It's all about hearing both sides, giving both sides an opportunity, not jumping the gun, and making sure that we do what's right.
Number one, why didn't the state of Alabama jump up and down? Because they didn't get a hearing.
I don't know.
Number two,
I don't know.
Many years ago, there was a back door called Obamacare.
Yes.
That was done illegally. The people of the United States was not given the opportunity to vote on this. Obama done it himself. And so with me looking at a illegal back door, and look, I'm going to catch flack for saying this, it's the same thing in this case.
Yeah.
There was a back door, and a person got set free that shouldn't have got set free, that should still be in prison right now.
Yeah.
So why did it happen? That's what I want to know.
I don't know. I have no idea.
Something, to me, something's there why it happened.
Yeah.
It don't just happen.
Yeah.
Because if a judge knows the law and has seen the prior cases where everybody else denied it, then they should have denied it also.
You would
there
think.
Has to be something there.
You would think.
And the reason he can't go back to jail right now
is double jeopardy, I guess.
Obviously, he's not violated.
Well, look, I mean, they let him go, so.
That's right.
So he's gone.
It may be a double jeopardy issue. It's a big issue, but now listen. That is one example of a case it's a lesson. It's a lesson that everybody should learn in the system and say, whoa, we can't let this happen again. You know what I'm saying? This shouldn't have happened anyway. We can't let it happen again. How do we prevent it from happening? You just follow the rules.
So,
I need to read Rule 32 because I guarantee if you read Rule 32 of the criminal procedures, it says when one of these petitions are filed, it probably says, number one, that the state gets 30 days to respond, blah, 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 and everything
right.
else. So if you read the rules and follow the rules, this stuff ain't going to happen.
Right. So I'll use the word benefit of the doubt.
Yes.
So benefit of the doubt for this case, for what I've heard, is that she had no paperwork in front of her whatsoever of what his prior convictions was. And I don't think that's true. I think she had everything in front of her.
I don't know.
That's my opinion.
Well,
but I don't know.
It may be. These are old.
These are old cases. This is a 2003 case. He got convicted 2005. So a lot of that stuff is archived, which you can still go back. I can still pull it up. You can still pull
it up. But I'm thinking, but see, this is just me. I'm thinking me as a judge, I want to know everything about this case. Before I do any kind of ruling, I need facts before me to look at.
When you make a major ruling like this. You
yeah, and that's think. Major.
Yes, it is major.
But I kind of agree. And this it's is a lie. My opinion, being in the court system, as much as I have, it was single piece.
I don't know. It may, it, you know what? I don't know. But I'm. It's just my opinion. I'm just thinking you have to have facts before you let somebody go that's had five prior felonies. We'll be back in just a moment.
When a disaster occurs, neighbors and community organizations want to reach out and help. But this isn't always easy. That's where your local Cullman County VOAD can help. VOAD stands for Voluntary Organizations Active in Disaster. Your Cullman County VOAD serves to coordinate relief efforts throughout the county during times of crisis to ensure no area or family is left unassisted. But to do this, the Cullman County VOAD needs your help. Whether you're an individual, faith-based group, civic organization, or business, your Cullman County VOAD needs your help. To learn how you can be a part of the Cullman County VOAD, call the Cullman County EMA at 739-5410, 739-5410. Email CullmanCountyVOAD@gmail.com or search Cullman County VOAD on Facebook. Your Cullman County VOAD is Volunteer Organizations Active in Disaster.
Attention Cullman business owners. You are the people we want to hear from. All of us here at Live 95 want to take a moment to remind you of what life was like before Live 95. Yeah, so we don't want to go back to that. This is just a friendly reminder that Live 95 can help you. If you're a new business just getting started, or a well-established large business, Live 95 can actually help you get tax breaks on your tax bill. Woo-hoo! Hey, we're not kidding. Seriously. Send us an email at studio@live95cullman.com today or visit our website, live95cullman.com, and click on support to find out more right now. Do it. Thanks for listening to Live 95. We're Cullman's independent radio. There are a lot of signs on the side of the road right now, which means an election is coming up. Sure, name recognition is good, but in 2018, voters expect a little more than that. We can help. Radio is a great medium to tell voters more about yourself, your platform, and your goals. Our very own Melissa with Live 95 is ready to take your call at 256-339-5554. 256-339-5554. Live 95 can help get your message out to Cullman County. You're listening to Live 95. Welcome back. Live 95 is Cullman's independent radio. You're listening to Understanding the Law, a show taking your questions about how the law affects you. A show that is a deep discussion on the most common topics that come up in a law office and how the system of law works right here in Cullman County. If you have a question about the law, give us a call here at the Live 95 studio at 256-737-9505. This program is made possible by the support of local Cullman attorney Melvin Hastings. Views and opinions presented on this show are not the views and opinions of Live 95 staff or management. You should independently verify information heard on this program yourself. And now, once again, here's your host for Understanding the Law, Big D, Daryl Netherly.
I only have one question. How does this hour fly by so fast?
It's 6:49. It's gone. It's gone, crazy. Man. You know, and when I'm and like whenever we have these candidate forums, but I'm glad Wade Harbison and the Republican Party they've given us an opportunity to go out and talk. Excuse me. Have people from the audience ask us questions. It's great. The problem is the time constraints. You know what I'm saying? You when you got 5 minutes to plead your case, you can't do it. You know what I'm saying? Because
you know, we probably spent 20 minutes talking about this one issue.
Right.
And everything I talk about is important. And everything that I said a minute ago is laid out. It's all fact. It ain't none of this is made up.
Right, it's all facts.
It's all facts. It's in a 2-page ad where you can actually, if you want to spend the time, you can read the orders yourself. And then under each order, I put a synopsis of it. I said, this is what happened in this order. Now, people, they're free to read and whatever else, but
exactly.
It's 100%. There ain't nothing in that that's not factual. 100% facts. And but it's just some things that needed to be pointed out. For instance, when you read the case is transferred, then you see this order, people don't realize, unless it's pointed out that, oh, wait a minute, this case was transferred March the 9th, and this order was entered March the 11th. That's 2 days. Well, I pointed that out. Because that's important.
Right.
That's an important issue in that. So, like I said, that's one of the cases. I got a bunch of cases. I could talk for 2 hours on the cases because you can learn things. Hey, we got 9 minutes. Let me tell you about another case, if it's all right.
Yep.
Okay, because this is important, and it kind of goes along with this. So there's another case I kind of referenced the other night at the Fairview Forum. But you got this particular guy that is on probation for theft. Okay. He was charged with a felony, but he pled to a misdemeanor, but he's on probation with theft. While he's on probation, he picks up a new shoplifting charge in town at Walmart, actually, I think it is. So we have a hearing, and I say we because I actually was appointed to represent him in this hearing.
Okay.
So I had this hearing for him, and they presented a witness from Walmart. It says, we've seen this guy going around stealing all this stuff. So the judge ruled, my opponent ruled, you violated the terms of your probation. I'm reasonably satisfied you committed another crime, and I'm revoking your probation, which was proper in that case. Should have been done because they had more than enough evidence of what had happened. So this guy, this person's got to go serve his time for his whatever his misdemeanor sentence was, a year, 2 years, whatever else. Well, then I'm still in the case. About 2 or 3 weeks later, I seen this motion come across there that was electronically filed, so I'm still getting motions and what happened in this case. I seen this motion that says, well, wait a minute, Judge. You messed up. You should have never revoked his probation because when he had his first, the case that he was in on, the case that he was serving, that he was on probation for, you made a mistake by not entering the written order of probation. And I thought, I ain't never seen that. And then this new lawyer quoted this rule. I think it was rule 27 or whatever else in the rule of criminal procedures. It says, this rule says, for someone to lawfully be on probation, you have to enter a written order of probation and the rules in there. And if you don't do that, then they're technically not on probation and you can't revoke their probation. And I thought, boy, that's something I didn't know.
Right.
So I was like, crap, that's something good to learn. You know, learn as a lawyer, you know, if you're representing people that's charged with crime. So I go back and then this motion's filed. And then a couple of days later, there's an order entered that releases this guy back out on probation again. So he gets released from jail. He's serving his sentence, but now he gets released back out on jail. So I'm like, man, I need to learn this law for sure. So I look at the rule, and I look at an Alabama Supreme Court case that interprets this rule, and it says this rule's out there, and that's right. It says, but it does not apply when someone's probation is revoked for committing a new crime because it is presumed out there that everybody knows if you're on probation, you can't commit a new crime. If you commit a new crime, then this rule don't help you out. So then I'm like, whoa-oh. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
This guy committed a new crime. So
he's already out.
He got his probation revoked, and that written order didn't really matter, and this rule don't really matter in this case. But now he's back out on probation. So I was like, well, he's a lucky cat because this worked. Well, what's the lesson in that? What's the teaching point in that? That is a rule that I didn't know about. I admit I've been doing it 16 years and that happened a couple years ago. So 15 years in practice, 14 years in practice, I didn't even know this rule. So I learned this rule, but I also learned by when I went and read the rule, because when I read the rule, there's something that caught my attention and I seen a Supreme Court case on it. So I read a Supreme Court case about it. and it says that this rule don't apply. So the lawyer was pretty smart. He says, oops, you messed up, judge. Number one, made a mistake in not doing the written order of probation. Your mistake number two is that you revoked his probation. So you ought to let him back out. So he was let back out. Well, there's another mistake made because he shouldn't have been let back out because the rule didn't apply for him.
Exactly.
All right, now then, let me finish the story. So that happens 1 month. A month later, he gets his written order of probation entered into his case eventually. Then guess what happens a month later?
I bet he commits another crime.
Selling Adderall.
Say it.
Yeah. Okay, and then what happens 3 months later? He gets caught. He gets charged eventually for selling methamphetamine within a school zone, which is a 3 mile radius. So while he's out on probation, he picks up two more cases. So unfortunately for this guy, if he would have been in jail when he got his probation revoked, then he wouldn't have committed these new crimes, because
right.
This was within 3 months, and he was going to serve 3 or 4 months of this. I can't remember whatever sentence he had. He would have never committed them crimes, but here he is committing these new crimes, and his probation still was not revoked.
Mm.
So there again, it's one of them. No hearing in this case. Now, I mean, we had our hearing,
right.
But when they filed this motion, it was, "Hey, I'm going to let you back out again." Without giving the state an opportunity to have a hearing and this rule to really be looked at, because I'm going to tell you, I don't know how many lawyers know about this. I don't think many lawyers know about this rule that says that. But it only applies for technical violations. And the reason they have, and the reason that Supreme Court case come about, it was an older Supreme Court case, but this person was on probation, went to work in Tennessee. They filed to revoke him because they said, "You left the state." All right. So this guy got revoked on this Supreme Court case. And he had to serve his sentence. So he took the case to Supreme Court. Supreme Court says, well, you know what? He didn't really know that he couldn't leave the state, which is a technical violation, which makes sense. You know, that's why that rule is in place. You got to give them written orders. If you're going to make them follow these rules, certainly rules, they need to know what rules they're going to follow before
right.
you revoke them. But like the Supreme Court case ruled on this, says, but everybody knows you can't commit a new crime while
right.
you're on probation. So this rule don't apply in that situation. So it's about, it's a lesson, it's a learning lesson. Know what you're doing. Read the law. If you don't know the law, read the law, pay attention to it. And then the bigger lesson is, I mean, this, even though this person got set free and thought, "Aha, ha, I'm on probation," look what he's picked up, two more felonies.
Right. And you know, and I bet it's probably a nice little fine for selling dope by school.
If you get convicted of it, then I think it's a 5 year. I think it's 5 years. They added on it. I think
and
it's
it
a
5 year
on there. You know, and it's within a 3 mile radius. Hey, it ain't only schools. It's 3 mile radius of housing authorities. It's schools. I don't know. They may have something else, but them can get you 5 years. And then if you have a gun possession, you know, you can get caught with drugs or. Yeah, let's just use drugs as a crime. And the fact that you have a gun with you can get you an extra 5 years.
Because wow. I could stuff. Be wrong, but I could have swore several years ago or something that I had read where one or two people actually got busted selling dope over by Cold Springs High School. And I'm thinking, ooh, that's not good.
Yeah. Well, you know, and sometimes, hey, listen, and it's not just selling. It's people don't understand this. Distribution is giving away, furnishing it. So, for instance, you're having back pain. It's like, man, here's your lower tab.
Right.
That's distribution.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I don't have the authority. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a pharmacist. And I give you a prescription pill.
Right.
That is distribution, you know. Mm. Now, typically, they're not going to come out and get us. You know what I'm saying? But if you're doing it to make money or you're doing it a lot, eventually you're going to get caught because
right. –
if you're doing it, the somebody's going to get caught in trouble somewhere else. This is how narcs come in. They get caught, and they're going to say, man, you're going to have to find us somebody that's
yep.
selling these pills. That's, well, I know Joe
yep.
Smith over here
yep.
is selling the heck out of them. I'll go over and ask them for one, and then you get set up, and that's how you get caught with distribution. So
I mean, it's crazy for me to, and I know it is for you, to see these people on probation, and they go out and pick up a new crime. I just don't get it. I guess they're just made that way.
They're lifelong criminals. They have, and a lot of them they do. They have problems. they have an addiction.
Doggone right, they got a problem.
They got problems. They get bigger problems, but you know they have, a lot of them have addiction problems. But man, you just got to make better choices. But what are the consequences?
But they already know the consequences. Yeah. Well, if I get caught, I'm going back to the pen.
Yeah.
But I'm going to do it anyway. Well, I just don't
take
get
that
it.
Chance. But it's crazy. It's a crazy world.
It is.
But you know, I'm going to tell you this stuff is serious.
It is serious.
It affects other people's lives. It affects these guys' lives, yeah. You know, and I mean, the decisions you make is very important. That's why I'm going to make the right ones.
It is. Thanks, everybody, for being tuned in to Understand the Law. Catch Little D and Big D on the Big D Radio Show this Thursday at 6 p.m. because I don't know who the guests are, as always. And then come back next Tuesday at 6 p.m. for Understanding the Law as we dive into more things with this political race, and I believe June 5th is the primary. So
5 weeks.
Everyone go out and vote. I'm sorry. Saturday, you can check out Big D and Little D as we are the MCs of the barbecue championship grilling thing going on at the Strawberry Festival. Look, check it out. I think you spend $10 for a bracelet, and you get to eat barbecue from every single person in that competition.
Can't beat that.
$10.
Saturday.
Seriously.
All day.
So Cosmic Sound DJ Entertainment, we have provided our services for free, and we're going to MC for free. All the money is going to the Link of Coleman County. So come out to the Strawberry Festival. Check out Little D, Big D, and you can have your picture made with us. We'll sign some autographs. We'll give you some food. Look, I might let you have some of my barbecue sandwich. Maybe not. Look, it's a deal. $10.
Get you a strawberry, too.
Yeah. And by the way, Don Owens of The Link is going to have a book signing May 15th, Yates Christian Chance Bookstore down at the South Coleman Shopping Center. Check her out. Go buy a book. Support her. This lady is awesome, and I just love her to death. We'll see you next time.